From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And we are just pleased and honored to welcome in a really special guest today by phone, Archbishop Emeritus Alfred C. Hughes, author of Spiritual Masters, Living and Praying in the Catholic Tradition from Ignatius Press. Archbishop Hughes, it is a pleasure and a joy to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Good to join you. Does this mean I'm replacing Bishop Soto?
we won't tell him.
I'm on the air in Sacramento.
Yes.
But good to be with you.
He's a wonderful shepherd to us. And believe it or not, just today they made the announcement that we have a new auxiliary bishop in Sacramento. Father Ray Bercible will be the new auxiliary bishop in Sacramento.
Well, I rejoice with you and with Sacramento and with Bishop Soto.
Absolutely. Have you made it out to Sacramento?
I have not. No, I have. The closest I guess I've come is Orange.
Oh, yeah. Which is where Bishop Soto was ordained, of course.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, quite a ways away, about 400 miles away from here. But Sacramento, of course, the city named after the Blessed Sacrament. So
that's right, and has a rich tradition.
Oh, indeed, indeed it does.
All the way back to Hosanna.
Yes, yeah. Archbishop, tell us first a little bit about your spiritual journey, if you would. You're a native of Boston.
I am. I was born in Boston, ordained a priest for Boston, became an auxiliary bishop in Boston before being missioned by St. John Paul II to Baton Rouge and finally to New Orleans.
Wow. Were you surprised to be sent south?
I sure was. I can remember talking with the apostolic nuncio time, and he said, I asked him, do you think the Holy Father realizes what it means to send a Yankee south to south? Oh,
yes.
And I said, I'd like to ponder this. And he said, well, you know, you can't talk about this with anyone except the spiritual director.
Right.
And I said, well, I'm on my way to Denver for World Youth Day with 3 busloads of young people. Mm-hmm. And he said, going to Denver, we'll talk about it directly with the Pope.
With the Pope.
And that's what I did.
Oh, wow.
So,
and he convinced you?
Well, the extent of the conversation was, yes, you'll make a good bishop there in Baton Rouge.
That's very interesting. You know, I hear more stories about World Youth Day in Denver and the conversions that came out of that. That it was really powerful.
It was a very moving experience.
Yeah.
And there were a number of young people that were very moved by that whole experience and moved into deeper faith and deeper and richer moral and spiritual life because,
So that was 2002. 1993 when you became the Bishop of Baton Rouge.
That's right. And 2001, I came to New Orleans.
Wow, Does Baton Rouge, did that come with season tickets to LSU football games?
Well, you know, I used to go, I was invited to any of the games, but I used to go to one game with the LSU Tigers and, mm-hmm. and one game with Southern University
sure.
Football team.
Right.
So as to reach out to both football communities and both universities.
Oh, very good. Very good. And yeah. What were your thoughts about moving on to New Orleans, obviously the archdiocese, and becoming an archbishop?
Well, that was a significant surprise, unexpected, and I had to surrender what had become my new home in Baton Rouge, and I thought I was living out my life there.
Mm-hmm.
My burial place at the cathedral had already been identified, and and then I was missioned to New Orleans, and of course it was a challenge a few years later to experience Hurricane Katrina and all of the aftermath of that.
Oh man, we remember Hurricane Katrina here in California. I can't imagine how you remember it there.
Well, time is calculated here, pre-Katrina and post-Katrina.
Yeah, I can believe that. I can believe that. What was the Archdiocese of New Orleans? What are the geographic boundaries? Is it pretty much the city, or does it go beyond that?
Oh, much beyond. It includes what would be called 8 counties.
Yeah, parishes.
Elsewhere.
Yeah.
Here they're called civil parishes.
Right.
And there are 8. Only one of them coincides with the city of New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and that's Orleans Parish.
Right.
So there are 7 other civil parishes or counties that are included in the archdiocese.
Very good. And how much of the population of the archdiocese or the Catholic population would have been concentrated in the city itself?
Well, in the city itself, about pre-Katrina, I would say about 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Post-Katrina, it's less than 20%.
Wow.
Most of the Catholic people returning and many other people as well,
mm-hmm.
Moved into the outlying areas, more protected,
mm-hmm.
Future residents. You know.
Has this?
And,
go ahead.
We still only about I would say 80 to 85% in the city,
mm-hmm.
after Katrina.
Right.
We had Katrina. You know, a total population, not just Catholic.
Right. Right. Has the city? Well, I don't know if fully recovered is the right term, but has the city pretty much recovered?
Yes, it has. However, we have huge challenges ahead. 80% of the city is below sea level.
Right.
So that poses an ongoing challenge and difficulty with rising Gulf levels,
mm-hmm.
and the land continues to subside. You know, we're fortunate that we have the levees now raised sufficiently to protect us, but at the same time, the land is subsiding that used to be replenished by the overflow of the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big blessing to have the levees protecting us. They protect us from the Mississippi River overflowing, but they also mean that what used to happen in the past that created the Mississippi Delta,
right?
That land is not being replenished as the land continues to subside.
Wow.
All of the delta is off the basic support, mm-hmm, that is provided by the continental shelf.
Right.
All of the land is just land that has been over millions of years built up by the overflowing of the Mississippi River.
Wow.
So this is on the continental shelf. Everything south of Baton Rouge is off the continental shelf.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So,
sounds a little bit like the Sacramento Valley, where for years and years and years the Sacramento River would flood and various other and created a very fertile farmland for sure. And now most of it is protected by levees. So we don't get the big overflow, even though we still get some pretty bad storms. Yeah. Wow.
It's a mixed blessing.
Yes.
But part of the new reality.
Yeah, indeed. You still live in, you're still residing in New Orleans?
Oh, yes. And I'm living at Notre Dame Seminary. Mm. And I'm teaching here. And doing spiritual direction of seminarians and priests as well, and religious and some lay people.
You know, if I was reassigned to New Orleans or Baton Rouge, I think my biggest worry would be being able to spell etouffee and jambalaya and ponchatrain.
Well,
those are tough words.
Now, if we're talking about places, yes, but food, you don't have to spell it. You just have to speak it.
That's true.
and was able to order it and consume it.
That's right. Well, it's certainly known for its culinary experiences. That's for sure.
We just completed last weekend what is called the French Quarter Festival.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the best festival that we put on in New Orleans. The jazz festival, of course, has much broader attraction,
mm-hmm,
but Quarter Festival highlights our local cuisine, our local music, our local art.
Mm-hmm.
And the French basically closes down, becomes a huge mall, with about 20 different platforms for musicians to play on, and family oriented. There's no entrance fee. It's a wonderful experience, and you know, at St. Louis Cathedral on Sunday afternoon, on the last day of the festival, we had a wonderful concert put on by our St. Louis Cathedral Choir, mm-hmm, and Orchestra. We did Haydn's Missa in Angusties, mm-hmm, and sometimes called Nelson Bass,
mm-hmm,
because it became dedicated to Lord Nelson after he held off Napoleon. As Napoleon was trying to move in Austria,
mm-hmm,
but the mass was composed during the long siege,
mm,
and why it's called In Angusties, in troubled times.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very moving mass text, so that and. the rendition of Psalm 19 by Benedetto Calvi. Mm-hmm. So it was along with all of the other venues for music, we had a wonderful contribution to the festival too.
I'm going to have to mark my calendar for that. I wasn't aware of that festival, and that sounds like it would be a wonderful event for me and my family. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful event, and it takes place either the weekend after Easter or the second weekend after Easter. Mm-hmm. Because Easter was early, it was the second weekend this year.
Very good.
it's usually the first weekend, Thursday through Sunday, after Easter.
It sounds like you've come to love New Orleans and the South. I know every state and every region in the South is different from the other, and New Orleans is unique to itself for sure. But it sounds like you found home there.
I have. I do consider it home, and we have our challenges, but I do really feel at home here, and expect to live out my life here.
Very good. Well,
believe it or not, I'm now 91.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
you sound like a very young 91.
Well, thank God, I've been given good health, and therefore I'm very active in ministry, and no longer, of course, is Archbishop Amon. In fact, Archbishop Amon is coming close to the end of his service.
Right.
As Archbishop. He turns 75 in November.
Okay, and that's the retirement age, isn't it?
Well, with some
exceptions, yeah.
When the Holy Father accepts it, of course, depends on him.
Right.
I served until I was almost 77 as Archbishop. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I am holding a copy of this beautiful book, very inspiring book, Spiritual Masters, Living and Praying in the Catholic Tradition. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Well, when I was serving as Bishop of Baton Rouge, inspired by St. Francis de Sales, who, as Bishop of Geneva, as he visited parishes, conducted a little mini retreat for the lay people in each parish that he visited. And then in follow-up to people who wrote to him after those retreats, the introduction to the devout life emerged. I wanted to offer formation to lay people. I tried to make my visitations to the parishes a formational experience. I did formally conduct a retreat, but I decided at the Catholic Life Center, at the very center of the diocese, I would offer a series of presentations on the spiritual journey and introduce people to some of the Christian spiritual classics. And the people responded very positively to that and encouraged me to write. And so the first edition of this book took place in Baton Rouge. When I came to New Orleans, I did a second edition because the first edition had run out. And now, because the second edition had run out, I decided I would revise it bring it up to date. And Ignatius Press was positive in wanting to publish it. So this represents a third edition of something that's gone through three stages of rewriting and development, but has grown out of my desire to help people who basically want to respond to God, but don't know. There's a lot of people, young people, who identify themselves as spiritual, but not religiously.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to respond to that hunger. So what I do is, in the book, I try to introduce people to a series of steps to take seriously the Christian invitation to holiness of life. And at each step, as I expose what is involved in it, I also introduce people to a Christian spiritual classic that offers experientially a way of applying it to life. I think we need to both look backward to draw on the Christian spiritual tradition and forward to address the contemporary issues. And so that's what I try to do in each of these chapters. So there's 13 chapters, and in each of them, in connection with expounding on a step, I introduce readers to a spiritual classic that applies and helps to make real the living of that particular step in life as it applies to our own challenges today.
How did you pick these 13?
Well, I wanted to introduce them to saints representing different schools of spirituality that are part of our Catholic Christian tradition. And I also wanted to choose those that very practically offered concrete ways of living out these steps. And I wanted to introduce them to classics that they might want to pick up and read on their own. I think, for instance, that St. Francis de Sales' Introduction to the Devout Life, the author of The Imitation of Christ, we think it's Thomas A. Kempis, but are not sure, both of those are very readily readable by anybody that doesn't have any special background in theology or even a lot of background in catechesis. And Catherine of Siena, you know, herself, Catherine of Siena had only an elementary school education. And yet, in prayer, came to appreciate some wonderful and even profound insights into Trinitarian life, the life Jesus led, the mysteries he celebrated, he lived through, and the way in which we can participate in them in the sacramental life of the church. So I wanted to choose those that that could help people, and also get introduced to people that they might want to read further into.
Did you have a favorite?
Well, I've been asked that before, and I have to say that I find it difficult to identify in terms of opening up the whole Christian life for the ordinary person. I love Francis de Sales. Uh-huh. In terms of my own personal growth in spirituality, John of the Cross offers a substantive teaching, but a teaching that can be broken open in a way that can be very helpful to anyone who wants to take the Christian life seriously. I also have found that, Teresa of Avila, in a very human and, I want to say, feminine way, engages people in the way to relate prayer to life. I also find that Augustine, in his Confessions, raises all the fundamental questions that young people seem to raise today.
Mm-hmm.
He faced them, and he responded sometimes poorly, and then finally, with God's grace, so he makes credible the Christian spiritual journey, the moral journey, and the spiritual journey. Oh. And, I also want to say this, kind of a sleeper among all of these is Guigo, who breaks open how to pray the scriptures. Mm. People want to know how to pray the scriptures. He offers the classical presentation on a simple way to first read the scriptures, then dig into the scriptures, and then to respond in a life-giving way to the Lord, who is the author of the scriptures.
Is that what you call Guigo's ladder?
Yes, the ladder. He takes people through three fundamental steps about reading well, reflectively, letting the word speak, then deepening understanding, calling upon the Holy Spirit to unfold not just the literal meaning, but the spiritual meaning, and the scripture become a love letter that speaking to the depths of the soul, and then moving. And the third step is what he finally calls prayer. It's speaking a response. It's entering into a heartfelt response to God for the insight and the desire, what has been appreciated previously.
We're talking with Archbishop Emeritus Alfred C. Hughes from the Archdiocese of New Orleans. His book, Spiritual Masters, the third edition, Living and Praying in the Catholic Tradition. You can get it from Ignatius Press, ignatius.org, or at your favorite Catholic bookstore, or probably other bookstores as well. How did you research all these people, some of them living so far ago?
Well, first of all, I did my doctoral studies in spiritual theology, and so I was introduced even back as a young priest to a number, not all of these spiritual classical writers. But then I served in Boston as a lecturer and spiritual director at the seminary in Boston. And while I was serving there, delved into the reading and background to be more deeply grounded in the Christian spiritual tradition. So all of that was part of the background that I brought to my role as Bishop of Baton Rouge and Archbishop of New Orleans.
I was fascinated by Walter Hilton, somebody that many people have never even heard of.
That's right. That's right. He has nothing to do with the hotel chain. but you know, he lived in the 14th century. Many people think, well, 14th century, that's so long ago. But you know, there are many parallels to what was happening in the 14th century and what's happening now. People were leaving wholesale the church. First there was the Avignon papacy, and many people in England saw that as French cardinals having taken over the church, and so they were leaving, and 100 years war was going on between England and France. Then you had what was called the Western Schism, with two popes being elected, one in Rome and one in Avignon, and dividing the church, and people were just disgusted with the institutional church. The Black Plague took the lives of 1/3 of the European population. We think we lived through a challenging pandemic. They lived through something that there was never any vaccine for.
No, sir.
And, yeah. One out of every three people died of it. And they were desperate for help in facing ultimate issues. Well, Walter Hilton came to their rescue and wrote a treatise, Scale of Perfection, to help people address the Christian spiritual life. So there were real parallels between what people were facing there, even though there were many other differences. There was an agrarian culture and not a high-tech culture that we live in. But in terms of church and spirituality and disillusionment with institutional church and walking away from, a lot of perils. And Walter Hilton tried to help the ordinary person with that.
That's so wonderful. Archbishop Hughes, it is such a joy to talk with you. I greatly appreciate this book. It means a, you know, we always share our books here, but I'm going to be sure I get to finish this one before I share it because I need all this guidance myself. And I hope the day comes when either I'm in New Orleans or you're in Sacramento and our paths can cross.
Wonderful. I would look forward to that. And thank you for making this conversation possible. Most of all, in addressing your wonderful family that's part of the community you're addressing, may God bless all of you.
Thank you.
May God to realize the full implications of the baptismal call to holiness of life. May He make that possible and give you health, happiness, and holiness of life.
Thank you so much, Archbishop. God bless you too. We're much, much appreciated.
God bless your ministry, Bob.
Thank you very much.
And give my best to you, good bishop, and I look forward to meeting your new auxiliary bishop.
Very good. We will. I'm sure you will meet all of them. Thanks so much, Archbishop. Greatly appreciated the conversation and the book. That's Archbishop Emeritus Alfred C. Hughes. The book is Spiritual Masters, Living and Praying in the Catholic Tradition from Ignatius Press. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegand, for that wonderful introduction and for all you have done and continue to do here in our wonderful Diocese of Sacramento. Well, we got a full house here. We've got George Bagley joining us. We got Peter Tremblay, close enough, joining us, and we're going to talk about the annual Vocations Dinner, something I will never miss.
That's right.
Pull that mic a little bit closer there, George.
We do not want you to miss.
Thank you.
We always pleasure to have you there to help us.
Yeah, it's always, I will say, a wonderful event, and people say, well, it's about vocations. It is about vocations.
Right.
And so it's serious. But it's also a lot of fun. One of my daughters she's in college now. She always says I want the date of that. She wants the date of that, and she wants a date of the Bishop of Gallegos Maternity Home dinner. Those two dates, she circles them. She makes sure she doesn't have a final. She doesn't have to work at her job during those days. She doesn't have class. She makes sure that she can make both of those. I think she's made every dinner since
everyone
she was
I've
like
been at, I've
4
seen her,
years
yes.
old. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is our 11th annual chapter, Northern California, Knights of Columbus, Northern California chapter dinner for our seminarians. And we're blessed, of course, to have the bishop and the seminarians will be there to tell their stories. Bishop Soto always, he comes at 4 o'clock and says he's going to leave in 2 hours, and he usually leaves about 8:30. He has a great time. And I'd like to introduce Brother Peter Tremblay, who is the Grand Knight up at St. Teresa's Auburn Council with St. Teresa and St. Joseph as well. And they will be hosting the 11th annual dinner this year. So, Peter, would you like to say hello?
Hi. Yes, thank you very much for having me and for allowing us to host this dinner. It's important that we do this kind of thing. It's one of the key elements that the Knights are involved with, and I think it's very important that something we should all be involved with, trying to promote and help vocations. And I think it's kind of appropriate. I was just telling George yesterday was Good Shepherd Sunday.
Yes.
And, you know, it's appropriate to be talking about need for more shepherds.
The needs for more shepherds, absolutely.
This is, I think, something that's very important for all of us to really be focusing on, and our council is proud and very pleased to be hosting it. As George said, we are blessed to have one of the best chefs up in the Auburn area, in the Foothill area.
Of which there's some good ones up there.
Yeah, he's been in our council. We actually are very blessed to have six chefs who have various catering businesses, and they're all going to be involved in one way or another.
Oh, very good.
We have one of our chefs there, Richard Queen. I'll give a shout out for him. He is the one who's putting together the menu for us. Hasn't quite finalized it yet, but I mean, we're looking at things like one of the main dish items will be a pork loin roast with either additions of choices of either chicken cordon bleu or salmon. One of the two we're looking at there. So we're trying
to. Do I have to choose?
Yeah. Well, if you want all three, we probably work it out.
That's why I bring my daughter. I say, you get the salmon. Okay. She's the one that always goes to George and she says, do you have any more mashed potatoes? And she, you know, when she's like 5 or 6, how could you say no? You know, George would go back. I think he went to Costco and got some mashed potatoes.
Never run out.
Yeah. So a lot of pressure, Peter. I mean, the previous 10 have been spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, there's pressure, but there's always pressure when you're doing anything like this and when we're anticipating 340 people. So, you know, it's going to be crazy and busy, but we're also going to hopefully be getting some more of our other ministries at the parish there are going to be getting involved with us and helping out. So it's not just going to be a Knights event per se. We're going to get other members of both parishes. We have St. Joseph's and St. Clair's. We're bringing as many people as we can to help pull this together and make it a success.
So you have St. Clair as part of your of the Knights?
Yes, St. Clair's is where majority of our members are from, St. Clair's, but St. Joseph's there in Auburn, the old historic church down there in Auburn, is also part of our council. And we've got some great brothers that come out of that parish as well. We've got a very active council. We've got over 320 members in our council, and they range from coming up from Lincoln up to Forest Hill, coming down. We may even get Colfax Council to come down and help us out. So they come down and help us quite a bit. So
very good. We mentioned Forest Hill. I love that bridge. I guess everybody does. You know, that's my kids. I say, no, stand back, kids, stand back. Right. I mean, it's very completely safe, but it's still, it's you just look down and you go, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area up there.
It really is.
It's great.
Really, really is. George, I know people just assume, you know, you come to this thing and everything happens and all the speakers and all the food and all the fun, and people, they don't even think you're feeding, what, 325 people?
About 320.
You have to, you know, get the hall, get everything. You got to get the decorations. I can't imagine doing the whole job. When do you start on this thing?
I was just going to tell you, we start in January, and we meet with Sister Maria, Father Memo, and Marcella here at the vocations office here at the diocese. And we just, you know, every first, I guess, January, February, March, it's once a month. And then we start getting a little bit closer. We have a few more meetings. But this year has been really wonderful. We really pretty much have everything together. And I've noted, and like Peter said, over the past couple of years, not just do the Knights get involved, but the parishes. Last year we were at St. Paul. The year before that we were at Good Shepherd. And we had Rosary Ministry or the Ladies' Sodality or whatever helping, you know, every ministry you could think of was helping put this on because of our love of vocations for the for our priests and sisters.
Yeah, we have debates, my daughter and I, as to we remember a certain thing that happened, and we have a debate as to which church it was in. And it's one of the things that we really enjoy is that it's all over, you know, that you move it around, which I think it's fair to everybody, but it also gives a new shot of energy into it every year, you know. And
it's like a parish revival.
Yeah, and I've been trying to convince George for years that I think Honolulu might be a good site. Palm Springs.
I'm talking to the bishop.
And we now, I don't know if you've heard the news, we are going to have an auxiliary bishop.
Outstanding.
Who was my pastor at St. James in Davis. And he not only will be at the dinner, I'm sure, but he will be part of the pre-seminarian basketball game the same week because he's the coach of one of the teams.
June 18th.
Yeah, right. So at Christian Brothers. So Father Ray Bercibel is now our auxiliary bishop elect. So
that's really
a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful man. Yeah, just a beloved pastor for sure.
That's great news.
Yeah. So the
I wanted to mention the speakers on that draft there have changed. It's going to be Frank Trunkus, one of the younger seminarians, is going to tell his story. And there will be a sister in charge of vocations. I don't know her name at the moment, but she will be speaking for the sisters. So it's going to be
from
this diocese.
Oh, from this diocese.
I just have to recall her name.
Okay,
so, but
Sister Maria.
Not Sister Maria.
She told her story one year.
Sister Maria, I tell her, sister, you have to talk. She says, no, I don't.
Well, the stories, some of the vocation stories are just fascinating as well. I just had the great opportunity to interview Archbishop Emeritus Hughes from the Archdiocese of New Orleans and talk to him about his vocation story, which goes, he's 91 now, so he's ordained in 1957. And some of the vocation stories are really, really fascinating, but also moving as well. So talk a little bit about the Knights up there, if you would, Peter.
Sure. We've got, as I say, we've got a very vibrant and large council there. We've got Knights who've been in the council. We actually still have some of the founding members of our council. Go back to 1964, I think, is when the council was founded. Mm-hmm. They're still involved, and they're still doing things for the council. Getting some younger members in there, trying to get that, keep that life moving forward and so forth. One of the things I do want to say that a brother Knight from our council who was very involved in getting this set up, who just passed away a couple of weeks ago, just very suddenly, Tim Schott, who was a district deputy, was involved with the Knights, fourth degree. This was something that was very near and dear to his heart. And he was the one that actually brought our council in to host this. And I know with that, a lot of our members will be involved in doing this in honor of Tim.
Oh, very good.
To be there and to make sure that we have a successful dinner and carry on his legacy and dedication that he's had for the Knights of Columbus.
George, how do you pick where you're going to have the each one?
Yes, every year, right about this time, every other odd month, we have a chapter meeting, and this coming up, it will be at St. Clair in Roseville in May 4th, and usually right about that time, I will say, you know, I'll be promoting this particular dinner, and some, God's willing, or God, by the providence or grace of God, a brother Knight will come up and say, by the way, we'd like to do this next year. It never fails. It seems like some parish some council comes up and says we'd like to do it. And so, and we hope and pray that it's diocese wide, so we get a good variety of places. And so we'll wait and see what happens next month.
I'm waiting for you to tell me it's in Alturas or Tule Lake.
I'm still holding out for Honolulu.
Let's do that. I mean, it is an unbelievable diocese in terms of the, not just the diversity of people and cultures, but the geography. You go up to the North State, and especially the northeast corner of this diocese, you'd think you're in Wyoming or Montana or somewhere, and then you've got the bay, and you've got. I remember the year we had it at St. Basil's in Vallejo, and the air conditioning in the gym was out, and it was one of those rare hot days in Vallejo. The sea breeze had not kicked in. I remember getting there early, and the women were selling the tickets to the raffle or something. The men were selling the beer. And I was emceeing, and I didn't know if it was St. Basil or St. Basil. So I asked the women, and they said, oh, St. Basil. And I asked the men, they said, St. Basil. And I said, you guys are no help to me at all. And I asked the bishop, and he said, whatever you want.
It'll be easy this year. It's St. Joseph and St. Teresa, so there's no confusion.
Very good. But I do remember at St. Patrick's in Placerville, they had it was before we were doing it early. It was a regular dinner hour, say 6 o'clock or maybe 5:30, and they had the Saturday Vigil Mass starting at 4. And I said to my daughter, why don't we go up there early and go to Mass too? And so we did, and it's kind of on a hill. You've probably seen it, and it's kind of on a hill, and you kind of park on a level, and you hike down these stairs. And then we couldn't find the front door to the church for a while, and we finally go in, and we're sitting in the back because we weren't late, but most everybody was there. And we're sitting in the back, and about halfway through, it gets starting to get a little hazy, and I said to my, I'm wiping my glasses, and I said to my daughter, I said, so I think she was a teenager at that point, probably 15 or so, and I said, do you see some haze? And she said, yeah, and it got hazier and hazier, and then I said, you could not ignore. It was actually smoky, and there was no incense, and then it started wafting back towards us, and it smelled pretty good, and the knights were cooking tri-tip outside, and the side door to the church was wide open, and smoke was just coming in, and it reached us. I think you guys did it on purpose to increase attendance, because everybody walked out of that church wanting tri-tip.
Never. We would never do anything like that.
But that was a great memory. So how nuts and bolts, how can people sign up and et cetera?
Yeah, we're doing it the old-fashioned way. On the most of our district deputies, we have 16 districts in the chapter from Vallejo all the way up to Weed, and they pass out the flyers and the information to their councils, and they're so they would actually go through their parish to the Knights of Columbus Council at the parish, and they would. Order their reserve. They can reserve a table, or they can individually come, and then the knights would go ahead and write up a reservation form for them. And it's kind of old fashioned. They'll send it to me, and I'll make sure they get a table and things like that. But it works good that way. We're not afraid of digital. We're not afraid of the computer. It just seems to be a little bit more orderly right now. Just to handle it that way. But they go to the council, they go to the parish. Where's the Knights of Columbus at? Talk to the Grand Knight or a council member, and he'll make sure that they get a seat or a table reservation.
Very good. And it is the 11th annual. It's Saturday, June 15. We'll start at 4 p.m. at, do we have the address? What should we do? St. Teresa of Avila Catholic Church, 11600 Atwood Road. In the great city of Auburn, you get up early and go see the bridge and see all that Auburn has to offer, which is a lot.
And I believe is that Highway 49 North or West?
49 North.
49 Highway, like you're headed
to Grass Valley Highway, except you're going the other way.
Right, you're headed toward Grass Valley.
Oh, towards and, where the church is. I was talking about where the bridge was.
Okay. Yeah, Atwood.
Atwood. Yeah, yeah. So you take, if you're coming from the valley, you take 80 up to 49. Do we call that the in and out exit?
I think there is an in and out.
There is. Yeah. And you just like you're going to Grass Valley. And you know, Grass Valley. If you get lost, Grass Valley is not a real bad place to visit either. So.
Pretty much anywhere up around there is real nice to visit. There's a lot of beautiful area up in that place. But if you are going 49 to get there, if you're going 49, you blow past the Bel Air on 49, then you've gone too
far. You've gone
too far. It's Atwood dead ends right there at the Bel Air.
Okay, very good, very good. What if people are coming the other, how else? I mean, I guess if they're coming, just the same thing, if you're coming down on 80, people are listening in Yuba City, Marysville, they go head up.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Peter, pleasure to meet you.
It was a pleasure to meet you.
And you've got me all interested in which food I'm going to pick. Just be sure you have lots of mashed potatoes.
Oh, we will.
And George, always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure, and thank you so much for helping us again.
Oh, it's a complete joy. So thanks so much.
Hope and pray that, all all of the parishes consult their Knights of Columbus, and they'll be glad. We would really be glad for you to attend. It's for our seminarians.
Very good.
And for our religious, consecrated religious.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless.
Inside of me, I feel your spirit is moving.